All right, on to the NFC East now. 7 weeks left in the regular season. We know the division will come down to a two-team race. Eagles and Cowboys both sitting at 5-4. But with Dallas coming off a loss and the Eagles stringing two wins together, Jerry Jones knows, quote, Philadelphia is coming. Chris Caney, who will win the NFC East? You think the Cowboys or the Eagles?
I'm still leaning toward the Cowboys just because the Cowboys have had so much success in the Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott era against the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, you look at their last 10 matchups, it's been one-sided affair. And the Dallas Cowboys, this team, finds ways to be able to give the Philadelphia Eagles fits. And it starts with Ezekiel Elliott. I think everybody understands that he's the engine for that offense. But in that game on Sunday night, Jenna, Mike Zimmer and the Minnesota Vikings defense, they were intent on taking Zeke away from the Dallas Cowboys, and they did. And Dak Prescott couldn't go out there and beat him, although he played a magnificent game. It came down to Jason Garrett and his play calling, or lack thereof, in the final 2 minutes of the game for inexplicably handing the ball to Ezekiel Elliott twice, being down by 4 points. It just didn't make any sense. Those two runs had a negative 3 yards net. So I look at this situation when everybody knows that they're trying to take Zeke away. What can Dak Prescott and that Dallas Cowboys offense do? And so far, they haven't been able to answer that question in the affirmative, at least not to the level that you would expect a championship contender. So for me, after last Sunday's game, I still had the same questions about the Dallas Cowboys going into the second half that I had coming into the season, which is, can Jason Garrett be the difference in a positive way when you're playing against quality competition? Can this team overcome adversity and injuries when you're not whole? Can you go out there and play at a high level against good competition? And then can Dak Prescott consistently play at a championship level? Those are still the three questions that have yet to be answered in a positive way for the Dallas Cowboys. We're hoping to see it at some point, but Jenna, up until this point in the season, they haven't shown us anything that would lead us to believe that those questions are going to be answered in a positive way.
But you're still leaning them slightly. Is that
I'm
correct?
Still leaning that way slightly just by default, but because the Philadelphia Eagles have been so inconsistent this season as well.
Well, and to your point about Dallas dominating Philly in the Dak Zeke era, Zeke's never lost to Philly. 5-0 in his career in the five games. He's obviously missed a couple of them that they've played since he's come into the league. Here's the reason why I'm still with Philadelphia. And I was with Philadelphia before the year. They were so disheartening early. You wanted to abandon them, but they were never able to lose contact with Dallas. I think Philly could lose to Dallas in Week 16 and still win this division. Mm. I don't think that any longer they have to get the split. I think that you look at Philly and you say, okay, in the final seven games, they have four games that, even as inconsistent as they've been, you'd be shocked if they lost. Those games are, of course, against Miami, two games against the Giants, and Washington. So if they're sitting at five wins, if they just have to not fall all over themselves to get to nine, then even if they lose to Dallas, they can win this division. Now, whoever wins this division is going to be a 9 or 10 win team that is going to be at home in the first round against an 11 or 12 win team that doesn't win the NFC West. One of those teams we saw last night is going to end up being an overqualified wild card team, probably a road favorite in the first round of the playoffs against one of these two teams. But Dallas, Philly is already through the gauntlet of their schedule. Dallas is just now beginning the gauntlet of their schedule, which is why them both being 5-4, even with Dallas right now having the head-to-head, to me that favors Philadelphia. And the other name you mentioned that I think is a huge feather in Philly's cap is the head coach of the Cowboys, Jason Garrett. And Doug Peterson might not be the top five coach he appeared to be after they won the Super Bowl, but I trust Doug Peterson in game management. I trust Doug Peterson as far as understanding how to put his team in tight spots at the end in a better position than I trust Jason Garrett. The Cowboys this year, 0-3. In one-score games. They had a close one against New Orleans, couldn't pull it off. They had a close one where they could have forced overtime against the Jets, and if they force overtime, they win that football game against the Jets, in my estimation. Mm-hmm. And they throw a pass to Jason Witten, and then 2 days ago, they have the game against Minnesota, which is there for the taking, and Dak said it after the game. I missed this yesterday, but I read the quote this morning. After the game, Dak said, yeah, I think, you know, we don't want to leave too much time on the the clock there for Philadelphia, for Minnesota. But you're worried. That is the ultimate definition of putting the cart before the horse.
Score.
The time, you got to score.
Exactly.
You
got to get points and then worry about leaving.
And in fact, while you're trailing, you need to score as quickly as possible. Because if you don't score, keep in mind, Dallas did get the ball back, but they only had 17 seconds. Mm-hmm. Had they not been as worried about grinding the clock, even if they fail on that second, third, and fourth down, maybe they have 45 seconds left. Maybe they have a minute left for Dak to try to pull off some heroics. So even though thus far this season, Dak has been better than Carson Wentz, and that was an advantage that I gave to Philadelphia going into the year, holistically as a total, I still believe in the Philadelphia Eagles more.
I think a lot of people would say at the beginning of the season that Carson Wentz would probably somehow edge out Dak Prescott at least a little bit just from what we've seen the last couple years, take the head-to-head out of it. Mm-hmm. You look at both of these teams, they're both stacked at the skill positions. They both got tons of talent, and yet both teams have been so inconsistent this season. Does it come down to the quarterbacks and who you trust more down the stretch?
Well, here's the thing. I think Carson Wentz, from an ability standpoint, just has more than Dak Prescott. But the conversation is about the intangibles. Which quarterback is able to bring out the best in his guys most consistently? And I'd probably lean slightly toward Dak in that regard. Now, as far as Carson Wentz, the questions have been about his being able to stay healthy for his team and be available. But if these two guys are both healthy, then, yeah, I think it'll be a closely contested race, and it'll come down to that Week 16 matchup. But the Dallas Cowboys, to me, the biggest question is the head coach. And Nick talked about some of the sequencing with play calling. But, I mean, you had the first possession in that fourth quarter against the Vikings where you had the ball first and goal at the six-yard line. You got to settle for a field goal. Or even going back to the first possession that you had in the game where you get the ball in plus territory and you try to go for Brett Maher, 57-yard field goal that ends up being wide left by 18 feet. I mean, in that situation, you have to think, if you've got second and six, maybe this might be four down territory. But again, it goes back to the overall game management of Jason Garrett. And I think that's why we see some question marks regarding his future in Dallas and why Jerry Jones has not given him the contract extension. Jerry Jones is not sold on Jason Garrett continuing to be his head coach, because a good head coach finds ways for his team to be more competitive consistently, and a good head coach finds ways to put his team in position to win football games, and the Dallas Cowboys have not done that routinely throughout the course of this season.
To answer your question directly, Jenna, thus far this season, Dak's been head and shoulders better than Carson Wentz.
Yes.
Like when you look at the numbers, if the Cowboys were just 6-3, let's say they had just won the Jets game, then Dak's name would be included in that second tier MVP conversation so far this year, because the numbers, he's top five in the league in nearly every relevant passing category. So I want to give him credit for that. The reason I can't trust Dallas, aside from the head coach, is because aside from the Philly win, their wins have come over four wins against three terrible teams. Two against the Giants, one against Miami, and the one that I'm leaving out that was against Washington. So if they are going to get to the nine wins they need, even if we give them the Philly win, okay, they also get Washington. Let's give them those two wins. Detroit has not been an awful team this year. We'll see if Stafford's back. They have New England. They have Buffalo. They have Chicago, who's a live team, assuming Trubisky doesn't kill them. And the Rams, who, while wildly underachieving, they have a winning record thus far this season. Like, the Cowboys are going to have to do in the second half something they were totally unable to do in the first half.
Right.
Beat some good football teams, and I don't know that I believe they can.
All right, Nick, is Russell Wilson running away with the most valuable player award?
I say absolutely yes. Now, there's almost as much of the season left as we've played. There's 7 weeks left in the year. For Seattle, it's six games. So an enormous amount can happen, obviously. But through 10 weeks, he's the favorite if you want to gamble on it, and he should be the overwhelming favorite for the voters. Now, I felt like, I don't believe in jinxes, but if I did, I would have felt like I jinxed Russ yesterday, because he's playing a brilliant game, making no mistakes. They're about to win in overtime. I tweet, he's running away, with respect to Lamar Jackson, it's Russell Wilson and nobody else is close. As I hit send, he throws the one bad pass.
So it was your fault.
I don't believe in those types of things, but the timing was spooky on it. Here's how great he's been. That mistake was shocking. I couldn't believe it happened. No matter, Patrick Mahomes, the guy we were just talking about, it's not shocking when he makes a mistake. You expect him to overcome it, mm-hmm. but every other quarterback in football, you're like, okay, you know, not once a game, but once every couple of games, so he might put the ball on the ground, might have a misread. Russell Wilson's made two mistakes this year. that I can remember off the top of my head. The pass that Marcus Peters picked off and took the other way, which was an enormous moment in that football game, and the play last night that he found a way to overcome. And he's doing it once again, Canty, with not a who's who, but a who's that? Like, this Hollister kid out of Wyoming, I'm not familiar with his work. He had turned Disley into a Pro Bowl-level tight end before he
pops Tyler Lockett, we weren't talking about.
Tyler Lockett, he started to lean on last year and turning Lockett into a number one receiver in this league. He loses Doug Baldwin, no problem. DK Metcalf, be the most productive rookie wide receiver this year. Josh Gordon yesterday. Two huge third downs. Russ puts it where he can't drop the football. And so the Seattle Seahawks this year, this is a pretty shocking number. Seven times they've allowed their opposition to score at least 24 points. The NFL teams this year win 28% of those games. They are 5-2, the best record in the league in those situations by far. You know why? Because through 10 weeks, they have the best player in the league, the player who's playing the best in the league and the best quarterback in the league, and that's Russell Wilson.
You know what? And probably the most impressive part of Russell Wilson's performance last night was surviving that 49ers defensive line, who had three third down sacks. I think he was sacked a total of five times. But they were getting after Russell Wilson, but it didn't faze him, Jenna.
Nope.
He found a way to make plays when his team needed him to. That overtime drive, that was his fifth game-winning drive this season, 28th of his career. I mean, Russell Wilson has routinely done this. So when you have the conversation about the best quarterbacks or the most valuable players, I mean, I have a hard time believing that if you take Russell Wilson off of his team, that you can just I'll put it to you this way. Russell Wilson means more to the Seattle Seahawks than almost any other player in the National Football League means to their team. I mean, the replacement level of Russell Wilson is, it would be tough to do. The Seattle Seahawks, if you were to take him off of that team, they're not a playoff team. But because he's their quarterback, you're talking about them being a championship contender. Now, I know you don't like to look at wins and losses as a quarterback record, but in this situation, I think it's applicable just because Russell Wilson routinely puts his team in position to be able to win games. And even though he made that mistake, the interception in overtime, which never happens, by the way, that's only the second time in the last 25 seasons, Russell Wilson finds a way to overcome it. And so that's why I have to look at this Seattle Seahawks team, especially the way that the defense is playing, through a different lens than I did in the first half of this year.
When you look at Lamar, Mahomes, Rodgers, Brady, you can look at each of them and say, oh, I know what they do really, really well. I know what makes them special. But what makes Russell Wilson so good? Is it the accuracy? Is it his mobility? Is it his intelligence? What makes him such a great player?
Well, I think it's a combination of all of those things, but Russell Wilson has this knack for being able to extend the down and allow his receivers time to uncover. Nick talks about the cast of characters that he's working with and not having any dominant skill position players. Well, I mean, those guys all of a sudden become a lot better when your quarterback is buying you an extra second or two to uncover downfield from defenders. Guys get lost. I mean, they run the scramble drill, and Russell Wilson has the ability to be able to find those guys. And Jenna, it always feels like Russell Wilson is playing within himself. It doesn't feel like a defense can get him rattled. He doesn't do things in terms of making mistakes at critical points in the game. And even though we saw it last night, he was able to overcome it. So to me, that's probably the thing that makes him special when you start talking about the best quarterbacks in the game, having that ability to elevate the play of everybody around him.
And when it comes to intangibles, Russell Wilson, and I mean this seriously, I'm not poking fun. Russell Wilson believes he's been touched by God in this regard, and he makes other people believe it. He makes believers out of non-believers because of his everlasting faith that we're going to be fine.
He's an evangelist now?
No, but if you listen to him after the game, he honestly, dating back to the comeback against the Packers in the NFC Championship game, the things that he says, even if you don't believe, you're like, I mean, he believes it so much. Yeah. I'm going to try to do this in 60 seconds here quickly. I'm glad people are finally catching up to this, because this is who Russell Wilson's been every day of his NFL career. In 2012, he comes in as a rookie, leads them to the playoffs. They're down 14-0 in the first round of the playoffs, leads a comeback for a win. Divisional round, same year as rookie year. They're down 10-0 at halftime. With 30 seconds left in that game, they're up 28-27, only don't win because of a Matt Bryant field goal. The next year, they win the Super Bowl. The next year, they're a yard away from winning the Super Bowl. His fourth year, they get back to the divisional round. He leads the NFL in passer rating. The following year, his now fifth year, they're in the divisional round again. again, his sixth year. He leads the NFL in touchdown passes. It's a rebuilding year for Seattle. They still are above 500. His seventh year, they go back to the playoffs. He has 35 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and a 111 passer rating. And this year, he's going to win the damn league MVP. This is a guy, the trajectory of one of the greatest players in league history. And we are seeing it on full display. And if you've been paying attention, we've been seeing it since the day he stepped onto the training camp field and took that job from Matt Flynn.
It's such a good point. And has so much when we talk about Tom Brady is who Tom Brady is, but he has had the benefit of working with Bill Belichick. Russell Wilson's had the benefit of working with Pete Carroll, and together they are probably the second best quarterback coach tandem in the league right now. Back here, First Things First, we're joined by Yahoo senior NBA writer Vincent Goodwill. Good
Vinny
morning,
with the
Vincent.
Fresh cut.
Good morning.
What's happening?
They don't cut hair in New York like they do in Detroit.
Wow. Okay. That's a take.
That's a little disrespectful.
How so?
I'm a native New Yorker. Don't do that.
My condolences.
Doing that.
Wow.
Really?
Vinny's out here with the. But I just. But you got a good haircut.
I found one.
Detroit
I found one. I would have imported if I could. Trust me.
Yeah.
I don't know who you've been hanging around.
People who keep my hairline intact at 35.
We're gonna just pause from this, and as exciting as it is, talk about something equally as exciting last night. All eyes on Kawhi taking on his former team, the Raptors, last night. To say the Claw did not put up a championship performance could be an understatement, finishing just 2 of 11 from the field to go along with 9 turnovers. Yet the Clippers still managed to get the win over Toronto, 98-88. After the game, Kawhi was thankful for his time with the Raptors, but also ready to move on.
It's over now, and we won. Like I said before, I had a great time there. But, it's the next chapter now. I can't live in the past just be so excited that I still won. I'm with a different team, a different unit, and they want to have that same feeling, and I do as well. So, I'm a Clipper right now. We're trying to win.
Vincent, if you take last night's stat line out of it, if you take load management out of it, all of that, will Kawhi carry the Clippers on a title run much the way he did when he was in Toronto?
I think so. They were my preseason pick to win the NBA title. And I know, Nick, you're not a fan of that. But the way I see it, with the way that they play defense, when you add in Paul George, who's yet to play, who's supposed to play in the next couple of nights, let's assume he gets back to form. You have two versatile wings who can take pressure off of each other, who can create their own shots. That's not to say that I don't have questions about them, because a combination of Lou Williams, Pat Beverly in the back court in the fourth quarter of games, and not necessarily a traditional stable point guard, especially on a night where Kawhi can have 9 turnovers and you don't have a secondary ball handler who can take the ball out of his hands or make things a little bit easier for him, that gives me a little bit of pause. But that defense there at that position, at the money position, to be able to guard a guy like LeBron James or James Harden or someone of that ilk, that gives me the most confidence even amongst the question marks that I have there. And I do think that load management plays a part, because I believe Kawhi will be fresher than some of these other guys later down the stretch of the season.
Just real quick to follow up on the defense, what should be noted, if people haven't really checked in fully on the NBA yet, is the Clippers, who I think everyone at this table predicted would have at worst a top 3 defense in the NBA. I think most people thought it'd be Clippers and Sixers battling out for number 1 defense. The defense been average so far this year. Mm-hmm. Last night notwithstanding, they went into last night's game with the 14th ranked defense in basketball. Their offense it's been very odd. The Lakers have been carried by their defense, mm-hmm, while their offense have struggled. The Clippers have been carried by their offense while their defense has struggled. My only concern for the Clippers defensively is that what we have seen, and by the way, we saw this with Kawhi his last healthy year in San Antonio, was when you have to do the lion's share of the work on the offensive end, your defense suffers. This is something that's always been unfair about what people say about Harden, except for when he was just not even caring on defense, was you have such a workload on one end of the court. LeBron this year, by the way, has a lighter workload on offense because of Anthony Davis, and color me shocked, his defense has been exceptional, the best in years. Do you have any concern that the Clippers' defense is going to be more hype than reality by the time we get to the end of the year?
No, because you're bringing in a guy that I voted in on my second on my ballot as Defensive Player of the Year last year and Paul George. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at a guy like Kawhi Leonard, to me, it's almost like a shutdown corner. You take away their best player. So then it's 4-on-4. And if your other four defenders aren't as good, then the defensive numbers aren't going to look as good. It's on Kawhi and the Clippers to sort of bring that back to the middle a little bit, have him be more of a help defender as opposed to just the shutdown guy that can snatch everything away. I think that was the problem in San Antonio, where people would just take away that player from that side of the floor and not even use him and then go 4-on-4. And that's not anybody's fault.
No, you're absolutely right. And Paul George being out is a huge piece of this equation, because you traded a lot of your depth to be able to get Paul George in the first place. No Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, no Danilo Gallinari. So you have to look at this team. When they do have Kawhi Leonard on the court, their defensive rating is 94.7. That would be best in the NBA. So you're looking at the bench players for the Clippers, who are such a huge part of what they do on the offensive end. Those guys continuing to have that same intensity on the defensive side of the court. I do believe that that's something that gets worked out once they figure out what their identity on the offensive side of the court is going to be. A lot of times with teams, when they're struggling offensively, it affects what they do on the other side of the court. So I don't have any concerns in terms of the Clippers figuring that part of it out. But the one thing that Kawhi Leonard said in that soundbite that I held on to was the fact that he said it's a different team, it's a different unit. That may well be true, but the philosophy is still the same in terms of how this team is going to have to compete for a championship, much in the same way that the Toronto Raptors did. It's going to have to be about depth in defense. That's going to have to carry them to the title. Last night, they shot 37% from the field, but guess what? They beat the Raptors on the board 66-38 and outscored them on the bench 56-35. If you can do that, you'll give yourself a chance against anybody in this league.
I want to go back for a moment, though, to your original question. Because I think there's a flaw in it to a degree, which is, can he carry the Clippers to a title like he did the Raptors? Kawhi was sensational in the postseason last year, the best player in the playoffs. No one can deny that. But I don't think it's fair to say he carried Toronto to the NBA title, to the NBA championship. Just like it wouldn't be fair to say, we'll see what happens this season. But the Raptors, as they proved the year before they got Kawhi, and as they're proving right now, are an excellent organization with incredible depth. They won 59 games and were the one seed the year before Kawhi got there. Now, they got knocked out by the best player in the world, but that's no shame in that. This year, despite a litany of injuries, despite guys being dinged up early in the season, they are 7-3 and simply ran out of gas last night. They're playing on a back-to-back. The Clippers obviously not. Like, most of these championship-level teams, or teams that are even in the category for it, yeah, they have a star player, but all of them in recent history, except for LeBron teams, they are a good enough organizationally that when the star leaves, they're okay. KD leaves, that team could have won the title. Without him, they're still a playoff team. Kyrie leaves, the Cavs, they go back to the finals. He leaves the Celtics. They're still, right now, they have the best record in basketball. Hell, Kawhi leaving the Spurs, they still made the playoffs last year. Like, we have, the Raptors were not Kawhi Leonard and friends. They were an exceptional team, and we're seeing Pascal Siakam becoming his full version of himself right now before our very eyes. So if the Clippers are going to win the title, it's going to be similarly to how the Raptors did it. Kawhi might be the leading actor, but that is an all-star cast around him, along with the great head coach like they had in Toronto.
Well, I would take umbrage with you saying with the exception of LeBron, because a year after LeBron left Miami, those Miami Heat were a game away from making the Eastern Conference Finals.
No, the year he left Miami, they missed the playoffs.
The year after.
So two years after.
The full year after the Chris Bosh injury and everything mm-hmm. else. So they were a good organization. Now to say that Kawhi can't carry them, carry to me means in the last 5 minutes, we know where the ball is going. We know who's getting the ball. It's just a matter of, are you going to stop us and can we stop you? And I think that is Kawhi's strength. Now, Kawhi, we didn't pick Toronto to win the NBA Finals last year.
No.
Once we got there, once we knew, even with Kevin Durant being out and we weren't sure if he was coming back, we didn't pick them there. Now, Pascal Siakam was certainly a revelation, along with Fred VanVleet and all those other parts. But Kawhi Leonard was that guy. Don't take away that credit from him.
On the playoff run, he carried him. I will absolutely, yes. No question. Listen, from that moment to starting in Game 3 against the Bucks to the entire NBA Finals, I am not removing any of that. The point I'm making is that Raptors team and the Masai Ujiri had been building a legitimate contender for years, and Canny, as we're seeing this year, that remains even when Kawhi Leonard walks out the door for no compensation.
Yeah, you have to have the infrastructure in place before you can compete for a championship. They have the saying, players win games, but organizations win championships. I think that would be true with the Raptors case last year, and I think that would be true with the Clippers if indeed they're able to finish the drill this year and get it done. I mean, because the Clippers have been building to this point for some time now. It just so happens that the timing matched up. They had the assets, and Kawhi Leonard had the interest where they were able to make this deal happen. But, I mean, anything short of a championship for the Clippers, and it's a disappointing season. So I don't think the Clippers could be an organization that has championship aspirations realistically without Kawhi Leonard. So when you say Kawhi Leonard has to carry them to the championship, I would tend to agree with that statement just because they're not winning one without it.
And just very, very briefly, credit to Kawhi last night, despite the really rough night, one assist away from his first career triple-double, which I assume at some point he'll get this season, and kept his double-digit.
That is some nice shade there, Nick.
What are you talking about?
Nick, that's a kidney punch.
One assist away, he's going to get
a kidney punch.
Okay, I mean, he's going to get a triple-double at some point this year, and credit to him for that. And he kept his double-digit point streak alive in 75 games now, which I think's 862. Too short of the
see how every shade. See how so everything shade. Comes back to LeBron.
He
everything.
Finds a
what
new and creative way to shade
LeBron's
Kawhi
name.
We're talking Patriots now with an AFC best 8-1 record, with the best coach to ever coach the game, present company excluded, and perhaps the best quarterback to ever play the game. The Patriots seemingly on track to go all the way again this year. But Tom Brady, in year 20, knows a thing or two about what that would take. And so when he said this week, quote, we're really going to have to ramp it up, well, we took a little pause. Mangini, what needs to change for the Patriots coming off the bye?
Well, he's exactly right. They do need to ramp it up. The level of competition over this next four games is changing, and we've seen that the last two games. The Browns gave him some problems and could have easily won that game outside of that period they had in the
three straight turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to overcome that. But you saw some cracks at that point, and then we saw what happened in Baltimore. Now they go four straight with really challenging opponents, and they've had difficulties. The problems on the offensive line are real. They're not going away. They're on their fourth left tackle over the last 3 years, and the injury at center, that has been really difficult to overcome. And you've got Mike Devlin, the tight end fullback. He's no longer there. The problems in the kicking game. But the O-line problems are showing up in the running game, especially where they're almost a yard less at this point in the season on average than they were last year. And that consistency in the running game allows them to set up so many other things. Now, the good news for them is that they do get N'Keal Harry back. Mohamed Sanu is getting more reps. He's getting more acclimated to the system. And I think Ben Watson hasn't been as productive as they've hoped, but he does give them a chance for some vertical speed down the field that
and someone that Brady trusts,
have.
It would appear.
He's reliable. He brings a different type of element to the passing game than what they had when Ben wasn't there. And then we'll see where Isaiah Wynn is and what he can contribute. But this next four game stretch is going to look a lot different than what we saw in the early part of the season when they were playing teams that weren't very challenging.
Well, to me, it's about the four-game stretch, Coach, but it ain't about that. Because, I mean, you're playing against Philly, Dallas, Houston, and Kansas City. Three of those four games are in Foxborough, and we know how good Bill Belichick is at home going up against young quarterbacks. To me, this is more so about positioning themselves for the postseason, because this team, this franchise under Brady and Belichick, they understand probably better than any other franchise in the National Football League how important it is to be one of those top two seeds in your conference, to have an opportunity to be one of four teams with a chance to go to the Super Bowl out of the AFC as opposed to one of six. So having that first round bye, I don't think they made it to the Super Bowl without having a first round bye. So if they want to make it nine straight AFC championship games, this offense is going to have to turn around really quickly. Last year, we know their offense struggled for the first half of the regular season, and then they morphed into an offense that was going to be led by a two-back rushing attack. But you don't have that James Devlin presence in the backfield. You You don't have Rob Gronkowski at tight end right now. So what
you
is
You don't
this?
Have your center.
You don't have
his name.
You don't have your center. I mean, Isaiah Wynn has been nicked up again. So you're dealing with a lot of injuries in your backfield and on your offensive line. It's a lot for them to overcome. And unless they have balance on the offensive side of the ball, unless they're going to be able to give Tom Brady some protection by running the football, then this offense is going to continue to struggle.
So that's just it. I mean, this is a team that if there's any team that makes changes in their bye week, if there's any team that changes what needs to, and coach, you talk about they know who they are very early on in the season and you spend the first month or two trying to figure that out. Well, then you're like, oh, okay, well, they'll come out against the Eagles this week and we'll see a different offense. They're not getting Gronk back. We don't know who N'Keal Harry or Isaiah Wynn are going to be yet. So what changes, Nick? They can't scheme their way to be a productive offense. Go ahead.
Well, the only thing I'll say is the fact that they're getting N'Keal Harry back and Isaiah Wynn, we don't know what they are, but it's very rare that you get two first-round draft picks back in the middle of the season. That's a pretty significant influx of talent or potential influx of talent. And then the Mohamed Sanu acquisition is important because it does give him another possession-type receiver, reliable receiver to go to. Missing that tight end, it's part of that triangle because they've had the back out of the backfield, the slot receiver and the tight end, where Tom's really been able to work the middle of the field very effectively, and you had to make a decision defensively who you wanted to cover.
Sure.
Now with losing the tight end in that mix, it's down to those two guys, and that's been something that's been hard for them to overcome.
And to be clear, N'Keal Harry is eligible to come back this week against Philly. Isaiah Wynn's going to have to wait another week until Dallas. And by the way, I don't expect Isaiah Wynn to immediately come in and become their starting left tackle, just like I don't expect N'Keal Harry to come in and immediately be their starting X receiver. Maybe by the end of the season, week 14, 15, either one of those guys could be in those spots because they've been searching at both those spots all year long. But the Patriots have played this year two teams that going into that football game had a winning record, Buffalo and Baltimore. Buffalo gave them all they could handle. And despite Josh Allen having a hat trick of turnovers and then getting injured and Matt Barkley coming in and having a turnover himself, that's a 6-point margin of victory in a game the Patriots blocked a punt for a touchdown. Then Baltimore whooped them. Baltimore was up 17-0, about to be past the sticks time, up 24-0. And then the kid the Patriots used to have, Cyrus Jones, made a better play for the Patriots as a Raven than he ever made as a Patriot.
Is he still on the payroll for
right,
the Patriots?
And fumbled the punt, and all of a sudden, New England got back in that game, at least temporarily. Philly, for all their warts, is a real live football team. Dallas, for all their inconsistencies, when healthy, is a real live football team. Houston, Deshaun Watson has had one of the best games of his early career against New England, and then Brady drove him down, game-winning touchdown pass to Brandon Cooks in the front corner of the end zone that Cooks didn't actually catch, but it's the Patriots, so why review it, give him the win. And then Kansas City, who played him twice last year and had a lead in the fourth quarter both of those games. So I just want to see the Patriots beat the types of teams they are going to have to beat in the postseason. I do not doubt the defense. I do not doubt the coaching staff. I'd be a fool to. The offense has been mediocre, and I don't know that a couple guys who have never taken an NFL snap are going to be major difference makers. I do think Sanu is a significant addition, and we're going to see that throughout.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.